Disc 8.
What was it about my gift, then, that caught your attention? Now that's a good question, my dear. I've seen 10,000 ideas buried in the toy graveyard, many of which I killed myself. And I've seen how precious few of the ones that get past the idea stage get to the shelves, let alone make a plug nickel for anyone. I think I can safely say I've learned a few of the principles that mark the best ones. Tell us the principles, Courtney said, polite but direct. She was taking delicate but regular bites. Michelle couldn't eat. As you were describing your contraption to your friend there, I said to myself, now that's something that I would like to give my own grandchildren. A little message from Grandma. That's always the sign of the best ideas. They strike you as something you want to use for yourself, you know? I could just imagine my little Caroline. She lives in Atlanta with my daughter and her husband. And wouldn't she like to cuddle a toy and hear her favorite grandmother whisper a lovely little message or read a short bedtime story? Michelle was distracted for a moment, wondering whether the original pillows had made it to Nikki's and Hannah's bedrooms. Tilly gulped iced tea, none too quietly. I'm seeing a plush toy, something like a teddy bear, with a big torso, like a mini pillow, getting back to the pillow concept. Comes in all kinds of colors. Real fun. She paused and stared into the distance with her shiny dark eyes. Maybe the paw has a little button for the child to press and the recording starts. Back when I was hot stuff in the toy business, those kinds of electronics were hard to find. I bet you're too young to remember Talking Trisha. Tilly laughed and gulped some more iced tea. The electronics didn't work very well and were expensive to boot. But I understand that today, you can get almost any technology that you want in a toy. Fast, cheap, reliable. And all of this flashed through my mind in the 30 seconds that I was listening to you. But you didn't seem all that interested. Tilly sniffed, as if affronted by the memory. So, Michelle jumped in. It's not that I wasn't interested. It was an emotionally charged day. I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to be rude. Tilly, Courtney cleared her throat. Do you think that Michelle's idea, I mean, her pillow, meets your teddy bear, is marketable? She raised her brows and kept her eyes fixed on the older woman. I already told you, Tilly said, just the tiniest bit impatiently, as she daintily wiped cheese off the end of her fingers. It had me, and I'm pretty darn jaded when it comes to ideas for new toys. But hasn't this kind of thing been done before? Aren't there toys with recording devices? Courtney asked. Sure, just like there are a billion or so places that serve coffee. So why are there Starbucks on every corner instead of a Joanie's Java joint? I've never heard of Joanie's Java, Michelle said. My point, dear, with a toy, it's got to have something a little bit unique. And you've got it. The parent's own voice whispering into that child's ear. Maybe singing a little nursery rhyme. Something about that gets you right here. Tilly slapped her hand on her heart. There are a lot of guilty mommies and daddies flying off on trips who will want to leave a piece of themselves home for their kids. If it's marketed right, it could be the next Cabbage Patch doll. Michelle and Courtney looked at each other in amazement. Absolutely, Tilly continued. I've been on the rocket ride when one of these toys takes off. There's nothing like it. Just picture a line of 100 mothers wrapped around the block an hour before opening time, ready to pull one another's hair out to get a toy before the store runs out. You think I'm exaggerating, but those mama bears can get vicious. Tilly cackled and rubbed her wrinkled hands together. Tilly, Michelle began breathlessly, how much time would it take to get a toy like that on the market, starting from tomorrow? Well, the first hurdle is getting a prototype made. That'd take a couple of weeks. Then we make an appointment to see someone on the new product committee. This is something that you'd want to take to either Hasbro or Mattel. They're the two giants in the industry. Let them fight over it. We'd be lucky to squeeze ourselves in at either place in less than a month from right now, and that's only because I know a few people. then another 3 weeks to get approvals through the committee, and after that, the contracts, which can take another... There's no way this can happen in less than 6 months, Michelle thought, much less 90 days. Tilly's voice faded into the buzz of conversation and crockery that was the background noise of the Upside Cafe. She looked over at Courtney, who had also stopped eating. I don't think you girls are grasping my point very well, Tilly reproached them. I'm telling you that you have a winner toy here. Michelle took a deep breath. Then she began, as pithily as she could, to explain the circumstances of her bet with her father-in-law. While she talked, Tilly dug under the shoulder of her warm-up suit, apparently adjusting a bra strap. Michelle concluded by telling Tilly that she had a 90-day deadline, except that now it's a little less than 83 days. Tilly gave a brief tug to the other bra strap. 90 days or 83, it doesn't really matter. They're both impossible. The word impossible hit Michelle like a sock on the jaw. Then suddenly, she was back in Sam's garden and hearing the story of the child trapped under the car, except this time, it was her own children under that car. Then an idea popped into her mind. Tilly, she began, play along with me for a minute. Suppose your granddaughter, Caroline, had been kidnapped and was being held for ransom. You'll never see her again, ever, unless you get this teddy bear to market in 90 days or less. Oh my, gasped Tilly, holding her hand to her bosom. I wish you wouldn't talk like that. Michelle forged on. They're going to take her away forever, Tilly, unless you do something that's impossible. Michelle glanced over at Courtney, worried that maybe she was laying it on a bit thick. But if you get this toy out 83 days from now, they'll release her. Could you do it then? Tilly set her jaw. Michelle already knew her to be a woman of imagination, and she was sure that Tilly was picturing someone threatening her precious granddaughter. Tilly pursed her lips and closed her eyes. She shook her head every few moments. Then she nodded. Then shook her head again, followed by another nod. Finally, she spoke. It'd be tighter than little orphan Annie's curls. Every single step would have to flow without a hitch. She looked out into the distance again, her milky dark eyes glazing over. We'd have to buy in at the very top, she went on after a moment. See, we'd have to be so good that they'd put aside projects that had been on the books for months. I mean literally taking toys off assembly lines. Only the folks at the very top would have the authority to push something like that through. Tilly polished off her iced tea, letting the last drops gurgle in her straw. Do you know how many toys they look at each year? Hasbro looks at 3,500. About 1,500 pass through for a second look. And of those, only about 10 or 15 get produced, less than 1%. From that point, it can take over a year to hit the stores. She pulled her bra straps up again, one at a time. No, she shook her head. I just don't see how. Think of your granddaughter, Michelle blurted out. Tilly looked straight at her, lips parted. She thought again for a few long moments. Well, what choice would I have? Who cares what the odds are? If somebody's got my granddaughter, I guess I'd just have to figure out a way, wouldn't I? Michelle began to feel hope flow back into her lungs. Tilly held up a warning index finger. I'm not saying I'll help you. Not until I make a few phone calls. Some of my original employees are still at Hasbro. A few of them have moved up the ladder into some pretty influential positions. And of course, the CEO and I go way back. Tilly drummed her nails on the table. The purple manicure from the other day was already chipped. I'd have to offer him something. They're real big on children's charities. Give millions each year. Are you willing to donate some of your royalties to one of Hasbro's pet projects? Of course, Michelle added hastily. We're looking for a place to tithe some of the money anyway. Tilly nodded her head, slowly and steadily, and continued to nod as she spoke. I've got a prototyper who owes me a favor. Michelle watched Tilly in awe. The shrunken woman was morphing right in front of them. Tilly was sitting up straighter, She was handling her fork with more grace, and her eyes no longer looked so cloudy. Michelle looked over at Courtney. She wondered if Courtney was appreciating the double magic, too.
"I think I've got one more winner in me," Tilly said, through a mouthful of the last bite of Monte Cristo.
"And it'll be real nice to see if this old gal still has any clout in Toy Town."
82 days. Sam gestured toward the apartment building behind her. "Here it is, one of my first major real estate deals." The members of the group who were working that day were standing in a tight semicircle in front of a Hunter Green, two-story building. Michelle could identify the individual units from the pattern of windows. French doors leading to wrought iron balconies, then a large window that must have been a living room or bedroom, then a small window that must have been a bathroom. The trim was white, striking against the green. Sam laughed. "The design reminds me of New Orleans, one of my favorite places, but that's not why I bought it." The sign above the gated entrance read, "Sycamore Gardens." It was situated on a quiet boulevard a few blocks from Main Street. Shade from giant sycamore trees along the avenue blocked out the rays of the rising morning sun. Sam continued, "Up until I bought this building, I was mainly doing little deals, single-family houses, duplexes, the like. Then a friend in my network told me about this one, 40 units. It was way over my head. I couldn't see how I could come up with the money. So I called my mentor." Michelle caught her breath. She couldn't imagine Sam taking advice, let alone instructions from anyone else. She noticed that the others looked similarly surprised. Sam picked up on this. "Yes, I had a mentor. Just like you, we'll all be mentors someday." Sam straightened her caftan and continued. "Anyway, as we were grilling the realtor, it came out that the owner had recently been turned down on his application to convert this building from apartments into condominiums."
"Aha," said my mentor. "Big money is always hidden behind a big rejection."
Sam shot a subtle smile in Michelle's direction. What he meant was that so many people quit digging when they're just inches from the gold vein. So we did some more research. Turns out some of the more liberal members of the city council didn't want to see some rich developer come in and make a killing on this project while depriving the city of affordable rental housing. Now we knew what their objection was, so together we designed a strategy.
"Who is this mentor?" Michelle asked.
Sam shook her head. "Not really relevant at the moment, Butterfly. He likes to keep a low profile. But I will say that if any of you ever need to go into Denver for some serious disease, though of course I pray you don't, you might end up in a hospital wing that has his name on it."
"Real low profile," Jeremy mumbled.
Sam, if she heard, and Michelle was willing to bet that she did, ignored Jeremy's remark and went on to describe the deal. "Don't worry about taking notes. We'll go over the numbers later. Anyway, as apartments, these units were worth $25,000 apiece. But as separate condominium units, they were worth $75,000 apiece. There was a $50,000 difference in value. On 40 units, that was $2 million, my friends. My mentor and I decided that there had to be a way to liberate this profit." The first step was to make an offer to buy the building. Sam offered full price, no dickering, but she negotiated to close the deal in 90 days. The next step was to visit every tenant in the building and make each of them an offer they couldn't refuse. She offered to let each tenant stay in his or her own unit as an owner instead of a renter. The purchase price was to be $50,000, a full $25,000 below market. Sam had already arranged for a mortgage for them. They were already approved. All they had to do was sign the papers. There would be no down payment. Their monthly payments would actually be less than what they had been paying for rent. Without spending a penny, these tenants would become instant owners, sitting on a profit of $25,000. Sam finished her story with a question. If that offer were made to you, would you say yes or yes?
I sure wouldn't say no, Jeremy laughed out loud.
It took 3 weeks to contact and convince each of these tenants how everyone could win. At the next city council meeting, the chambers were packed with people. One by one, the tenants approached the mic to voice their approval of the deal. After about 10 people had spoken, a blind gentleman was brought to the mic. He'd been living in the complex for years and knew every corner and stairwell. He said his greatest fear wasn't being forced to find a new place, even though he couldn't afford increasing rents. His greatest fear was having to learn his way around a new building. But under the proposed plan, he would become an owner. His monthly payments would be fixed for 25 years, and then he'd own it outright. He'd never have to move. The city council was faced with a dilemma. They could vote yes and convert 40 renters into very happy homeowners, tripling the tax revenue from this one property. Or they could vote no and face the wrath of 40 angry voters and their extended families. It was unanimous. They voted yes. With the building now approved for condominium conversion, it was worth 3 times my purchase price. So my bank approved a quick loan so I could pay off the seller before my 90-day deadline. Over the next 2 months, we completed the conversion, and my mentor and I netted about $1 million in profit. Sam paused as a motorcycle roared past them down the street. This was an enlightened transaction. Everybody won. The tenants, the city, the bank. Sam continued, "Being an enlightened millionaire doesn't mean that you don't earn a profit. It just means that you try to find situations where you can help solve a problem in a win-win way." Sam began talking about the characteristics of a person who makes enlightened money, asking questions and inviting comments as she went along. She elucidated for them about how being enlightened resulted in a lighter kind of wealth, money earned for noble purposes, as opposed to selfish wealth, or money earned strictly for selfish purposes. Enlightened wealth is honest wealth, earned with integrity, Sam said. It's principled wealth, because there are some things you won't do, no matter how much money is thrown at you. It is added value wealth, money earned where both sides can win. It is balanced wealth, because all the wealth in the world isn't worth ruining your own family for. It is leveraged wealth, because when the visible and infinite networks are fully activated, when the light of all that cumulative experience and wisdom is focused on one specific task, the result always flows lighter, easier, faster. The enlightened way is the only way to go, Eagles. Michelle felt the smugness of having learned some of this already at various sessions at the Rock, while also being humble enough to appreciate the review. Summer asked, "I'm curious, what happened to the blind man?" Sam pointed to one of the lower right condo units. "He still lives right there." A number of flourishing plants crowded the balcony. "Now enough field trip. Let's get back to my office. I have a lot planned before lunch."
"I'm afraid I can't join you," Courtney said. "As the saying goes, who's minding the store? The store is mine and I have to get back to it. I'll catch up with you later."
Michelle felt a moment's unjustifiable hurt, but Sam was unruffled. "We'll tape the discussion for you." "Why do you think I had you meet me at Sycamore Gardens this morning?" Sam turned to the flip chart in her conference room. She wrote the number 1 and turned to wait for her apprentices to answer. "You wanted to show us what to look for," Jeremy answered. Sam wrote, "Increase awareness." "To show it's possible to make a lot of cash in a short period of time," Summer said. Sam nodded and wrote, "2, build belief." "To show us how making money can be win-win," said Michelle. Sam wrote, 3, enlightened wealth. Then she tossed the marker into the tray of the easel.
There are several ways to make quick cash in real estate, like Sycamore Gardens, where we converted a property from one use to another. Can anyone think of another way? Fixing up a property, Renee answered quickly. My husband and I have done a few of those over the years, working weekends. He's very handy, and it's a lucky thing, because my salary doesn't go very far. It's amazing, isn't it? Sam said. You can put $5,000 into painting and a little landscaping and increase the value of the property by $20,000 or more. Are there any other ways? Renee was able to showcase her own real estate experience. Property values jumped dramatically about 10 years ago when they announced the building of a new ski resort near Deer Creek. Dick and I missed that one, though. Yes, that can happen. Anything else? So many questions, Jeremy said irritably. Why don't you just tell us the answer? Good question, Jeremy, Sam chuckled. Why do you think? Michelle squared her shoulders. It was nice to see Sam put someone else on the grill for a change. Well, Sam waited. I guess because you want us to figure it out for ourselves, Jeremy replied a little sulkily. Why would I want that? Sam asked, but this time, perhaps sensing that she had pressed up against Jeremy's limits, she answered her own question. Because when you discover it for yourself, you get an aha, and you learn it at a deeper level. But it's slower that way, Jeremy pointed out, as if saying, got you there. I call it the speed of going slow. Well, I'll mull that over for a bit. Let's get back to real estate, shall we? Sam continued. One of the most popular ways to make money in real estate is to look for bargains, foreclosures, distress sales, and so on. I call that buying wholesale. A good example is this building we're in right now. I bought it 3 years ago. The owner was involved in several other projects and was floundering. He needed some quick cash and was willing to substantially discount the price of this building to raise the money he needed. Sam went back to the flip chart to draw out the deal. He had about $1 million in equity. I offered him $500,000 cash, and he was glad to take it. He could have lost everything. He took the money, solved his other problems, got back on his feet, and is doing very well. I still see him around town, and every time I see him, he thanks me. The point is, I made $500,000 and doubled my money all in one day. Yeah, but we don't have that kind of cash, Jeremy objected. Michelle winced. She had taken off her rubber band some time ago, but she remembered the pang of the snap when she heard a yeah, but. Still, at the same time, she was amused at the thought of how Sam would react. You don't think I used my cash, do you, Jeremy? Of course not. I used OPM, other people's money. That's the easy part. Finding the deal is the hard part. Jeremy said, flipping a pencil between his index and middle fingers. So here's what I want you to get from this example. Sam returned to the subject. In every market, there are distressed sellers, people who need to sell immediately. They're overextended on other payments, or they're divorcing and need to divide up the equity in their house or other properties. I call them highly motivated sellers. Now, in the 50-mile radius around us right now, Sam took her finger and traced a circle like a lasso above her head. There are thousands of properties for sale. Thousands. But maybe only 1 in 1,000 of them is owned by a highly motivated seller. Right now, I'd guess there are 10, maybe 20 incredible deals in our target territory. The trick is finding them. Like looking for a needle in a haystack, said Summer, sounding very proud of her analogy. Exactly. Plus, other investors are looking for the same needle, so you snooze, you lose. I'm uncomfortable with this, Michelle began tentatively. It doesn't seem very enlightened to look for people with problems and take advantage of them. That's what happened to my mother when my father died, Summer said, sounding less cheerful than she had a moment ago. Give us the details then, Sam suggested. She couldn't afford the house payments, so she put an ad in the paper to sell the house. Somebody offered her some cash so she could walk away. Mom thought she could get more, so she turned him down. But 2 months later, she still hadn't sold it and was 2 months behind in her payments. So what happened? Someone came along and offered Mom even less, and this time she took it. At the time, she was happy to get rid of the house. She says, looking back, she should have taken the first offer. Mom would have netted a lot more money and saved herself 2 months of grief. Sam picked up the thread. If my drain gets clogged, I hire a plumber. If I get sued, I hire an attorney. If my appendix bursts, I hire a doctor. These professionals get paid to solve my problems. You get paid to solve real estate problems. Therefore, you look for people who have problems. Just remember to be fair, and you'll be all right. Do you all think I was fair with the condo conversion? To summarize, then, keep your eye out for situations that contain the seeds of quick profit. At this point, I just need you to be bird dogs. Bring me the leads, and I'll show you how to turn them into money. If you're diligent, I'm confident we can uncover one or two deals we can flip for a nice chunk of cash. She held the marker up in the air. What makes it a little tougher, of course, is that we don't have a lot of time. 81 days. Ring! A phone was ringing somewhere. Awaking from an exhausted sleep, Michelle groped to find the receiver. Ring! She squinted at the cheap clock on the nightstand. 6:30 a.m. Ordinarily, Michelle and Sam would have been up before this, standing on the point, shouting out their manifestations. Ring! But Sam had stayed over in Denver, and Michelle decided to play hooky from the early class of millionaire school this morning. Ring! Michelle caught the phone just as it was ringing for the fourth time. Hello, she said in her throaty, just awake voice. Hello, Michelle. Can you hear me? Hello. It was Tilly. Hi, Tilly. You're up early this morning. And on my one day to sleep in, maybe forget the stress for an extra hour. Michelle rubbed her face with her free hand. Early bird gets the worm, Tilly chirped. But the second mouse gets the cheese. What's happening? Michelle sat up and gathered the blanket around her. It was the middle of September and the nights were getting colder. You know, folks my age are usually up early. That's not a problem. The problem is that I hardly slept all night. Couldn't get the image of those kidnappers out of my mind. Thanks to you, dear. Anyway, I thought you'd like to know what I did yesterday. Called that prototyper I told you about. Joni. Michelle shifted the receiver to the other ear. Her heart quickened. I told her what I wanted, and she's dropping everything to make something for me. We brainstormed some clever ideas. She's going to make 3 models, 2 designs for girls, 1 for boys. She'll have them overnighted. We'll have the prototypes in record time, the day after tomorrow. Oh, Tilly! Michelle was fully awake now, her face flushed. Thank you so much! Never you mind, it's just the first step. We're a long way from a yes. I also put in a call with some of my contacts on the inside at Hasbro. Haven't heard back yet, but I expect it won't be long. I'll get back to you when I hear something. Michelle flashed on the Plan A, Plan B session in the conference room a few days earlier. Say, Tilly, what's our Plan B? What if Hasbro or the other big company doesn't take it? There was silence at the other end. Tilly? Tilly had already hung up. Michelle got up and jumped into her jogging suit. Within 20 minutes, she was at the Rock, shouting out the manifestation for that day. I am a money magnet. I like money, and money likes me. When she arrived in Sam's conference room, there were only 2 people there, Jeremy and Summer. They were sitting side by side, operating 2 different computers. The glow from the screens reflected off their intent faces. How's it going? Michelle asked. Oh, hi, Michelle, Jeremy responded, after a shake of the head that indicated that his concentration had been broken.
Summer and I have made some incredible progress. Jeremy got up from his computer and went to the head of the room, where a large flip chart displayed a neat headline in bold red letters. Looking for addicts. It's no secret that I'm a recovering gambling addict. Anyway, this might sound a little sick, but I remember what it was like to be addicted. It started with day trading. I was hooked on getting all the information I could get about the markets, about new trading systems, about a hot stock tip. I was a scavenger shark feeding my Jones for information. I bought books, seminars, newsletters. Dropping $25, $50, $100 was nothing to me. I devoured 3 or 4 books in a week, looking for just that one tidbit that would be my fix for a few hours. Then it would start all over again. I was insatiable. Do you know what I mean? Michelle looked a little worried that this process had triggered a relapse into his addiction. Jeremy seemed to read her thoughts. No, don't worry, I'm okay. Thank God for 12-step programs. But I should have been able to learn something from my experience. Anyway, it just dawned on me. Aha! Everybody is addicted to something. Everybody. Think of it. Golfers, bridge players, doll collectors, fitness nuts, racing fans, movie buffs, TV couch potatoes. We're a nation of addicts. Okay, Michelle said. We get the cultural commentary. So I'm thinking that when it comes to the internet, we need to find the addicts. People who are insatiable for their particular kind of information. If we want leverage, we have to find people who will buy without thinking, or stewing, or weighing the pros and cons, or consulting with their partners. Addicts, like me, buy quickly and more often, and they talk to other addicts. I have to admit that I'm uncomfortable with the addict analogy, Michelle said. Well, I can see why. Jeremy frowned, then brightened. How about passionate people? Summer had been listening to the conversation, having swiveled her chair away from her computer screen. Now she put in, I'm that way about shoes. I guess I was that way about quilting, Michelle said, feeling better about the whole concept. Not quite to the extent you describe, she added, but if I saw a quilt book in a store, I'd grab it, even if it was $50. Otherwise, I'd never spend that kind of money on a book. That's what we're looking for, Jeremy said. We need whole groups of these kinds of people and the information they're hooked on. And here's what Summer and I are finding. There are hundreds of online groups like these, like quilters or scrapbookers or wine lovers. The internet has made it possible for people to connect on a whole new level, which means that we can connect with them, too. He held up a fist for emphasis. Jeremy's fever pitch excitement made Michelle uneasy. But was it any different from her own crazy scheme to market and get rich on a new toy in 3 months? Michelle looked over at Summer, trying to get a read on her reaction. But Summer had just put a stick of gum in her mouth and was chewing absently, with a contented if spacey stare in Jeremy's general direction. No feedback there. Michelle asked, Why is that so different from the way business is done every day? Because, Jeremy impatiently raked his fingers through his hair, most businesses create a product first and then go looking for addicts. We go find the addicts first and then create the product. Why? Because if our life depends upon it, and we only have 90 days, we don't have time to guess what they want. We need to have this product work the first time out of the gate. So, using that as a guideline, Summer and I brainstorm lists of the most highly addictive, positive activities that people get hooked on. He directed a look at Summer, who was now twirling a lock of her blonde hair. Summer. This second, sharper mention of her name got her attention, and she sat up straighter. Then Jeremy turned the page of the first flip chart to reveal their list. Exercise, golf, sports, collectibles, food, dieting, hobbies, pregnancy facts, spiritual needs, chocolate, money, games, coffee. There are thousands of groups with anywhere from 10 members to a few million members. People wanting to discuss the nature of God, and people who want to build better bomb shelters for the end of the world. Summer giggled. My favorite was a chocolate group called Addicted to Chocolate. Their motto was, "After I'm dead, I don't want to be wishing that I'd eaten more chocolate." Jeremy rapped his hand on the flip chart. "But we don't want to sell products to these people. We want to sell information. It's cheaper. It's faster. It can be digitized. And wait for the best part. We can have all this information for free." "How so?" Michelle asked. "The internet is full of information that is available to anyone who wants to use it, like public domain stuff. So we can create it, market it, and deliver it for free, which gives us..." He turned toward the two women with arms outstretched and took a bow. "A 99% profit margin." Michelle sucked in a deep breath. It was still sounding a little off the wall, but certainly seductive. "It's important that we deliver positive, helpful information." "I'm with you all the way on that," Jeremy insisted. He went on to explain the practical details of his approach. A couple of weeks both to identify the groups and to forge relationships with the owners of the lists. Then another couple of weeks to research the market, to discover what information was needed, how much were people willing to pay, how would they pay, how quickly did they need it, what format did they prefer to receive it in. After that, he figured, about 30 days to create an irresistible bundle of stuff. Jeremy panted melodramatically, waving his hand in front of his face in a caricature of someone trying to revive someone, in this case, himself, from a faint. "You can see, I'm pretty optimistic. Michelle, I'm sorry I've been hogging all this. How's your toy project coming along?" "That's what we all want to know." It was Sam, just come in from Denver, coming through the doorway, in a stunning saffron and amber patterned African robe. By this time, Michelle had perched on the edge of the conference table and was swinging her legs. She certainly did not want to lie, but at the moment her intuition was telling her not to launch into a long and hyper speech. Everyone already knew about Tilly's background and about her interest in Michelle's initial idea, so Michelle merely added that they had persuaded Tilly to join them, but success was still a long way off. As Michelle was concluding, Renee came hustling in. "Whew! Have I missed much? I took a day off from school, but I've spent all of it so far in the field." She was as worked up as everyone else. "Have I got a lot to tell?" Courtney came in just a few seconds behind her. She had hired some extra help for the store to give herself more time for their million-dollar project. Sam took a chair at the table next to Michelle. "Well, my little eaglets, sounds like it's very busy in the nest." She gestured for them to gather around the conference room table. "My assistant, Stephanie, will be bringing in some truly fine Cajun food that Mama Eagle brought back from a new Cajun restaurant in Denver. I figured you deserved a little treat. Before I share my own news, I'd like to get a progress report from each pair. Who wants to go first?" Jeremy, still hyped up, raised his hand and then began to explain to Sam and Renee what he and Summer had been working on. Sam seemed pleased, but reined him in after a while. Then she turned to Michelle and Courtney. Now Michelle knew that the time was right. She let Courtney describe in her dispassionate way the lunch with Tilly. Then Michelle joyfully told them all about her early morning phone call and about the prototypes that were on the way. There were wows all around, except for the key wow. Michelle anxiously watched Sam's impassive face. "Michelle," Sam spoke after a moment, "I have to admit that I've gotten a little concerned about this toy project. These major companies move like molasses on frame-by-frame advance. I'd hate to spend precious time on something that might not pan out." Was this a test of her commitment? Michelle wrapped her fingers nervously on the table's edge. "Well,
You're the one who taught us about the infinite network. We've been sending out signals, and these people started showing up. What are the odds that I'd happen to bump into someone with so much experience and so many contacts in the toy business? Sam still looked skeptical.
Okay, so she sold her business 10 years ago, Michelle admitted.
But she was consulting with companies all over the world up until last year. I know the time is tight, and the probabilities are really small, but I just have a feeling that something's going to happen here. I just feel it. She tapped the left side of her chest. Right here. Sam's face relaxed.
All right. But as you're working with Tilly and her contacts, I want you to really, really tune in to any other possibilities that might create some quick cash. What I've discovered with hunches is that often the thing I thought was supposed to happen didn't. But in the process of pursuing the lead that I thought I was supposed to pursue, another opportunity revealed itself. That was the lead I was destined to follow, a path that was perpendicular to the path I was pursuing. Hunches aren't logical. One thing leads to another totally unrelated contact, who leads you to another offbeat opportunity that happens to be owned by the brother-in-law of the person you eventually end up with.
You've already got the explanation, the infinite network. It knows what you need and is using the 6 degrees of separation to nudge you in the right direction. You may end up with the result you imagined, just not in the way you imagined. As long as you get there, it shouldn't matter which route you take, right? Sam paused. What I'm saying is that my hunch is a little different from your hunch, but maybe we both need to go with that infinite network. Just remember that it's often down these side passages where the gold is hidden. Does that make sense? Michelle nodded slowly, just as Stephanie, a tall, sturdy woman, pushed the conference room door open with a cart laden with an aromatic mix of red beans, rice, blackened redfish, and crab cakes. The whole group descended gratefully on the food. Michelle was ravenous, and for a few moments thought of nothing but those first few bites, which she had to stop herself from cramming into her mouth. But even their shared hunger did not distract the group from the business at hand. Renee spoke through a mouthful of rice.
Sam, that thing you were talking about, that's exactly what happened yesterday for me. I just dove into the multiple listings at the real estate office that I have my license with. I'm a bit rusty since I haven't used that license in about 2 years, but then I started getting my legs back. There was another agent there, an old friend, Brendan, who helped.
And who just happened to be there, Jeremy said, wiggling his eyebrows, Groucho style, and clearly about to add, woo woo. Renee had bent over and now slung her briefcase on the table just beyond her paper plate. She flipped open the briefcase and pulled out several file folders.
Sam, I did several passes through the listings. I eliminated all of the houses priced above $1 million. Those properties don't sell as quickly because there are fewer people chasing fewer properties.
She was speaking too fast for Michelle to absorb all the details, but Renee was as unstoppable as a bullet. I screened what was left over to give me just the properties that had low mortgage balances where the seller had a lot of equity. That gave me 155 properties to look at. Then I read through every one of those to find any hints that the seller might be flexible. Words like, Sam prompted, very much in teacher mode. Renee rattled her file folders. Words such as transferred, must sell, seller might consider a trade, owner might be willing to carry some financing. Sam nodded. Okay. So there weren't many clues there, but 10 of them indicated some flexibility. Then last night, I tried to reach the agents representing each of these sellers. I figured if the agent was willing to indicate some flexibility on the listing form, that was more a mindset of the agent than the seller. I figured that the most creative agents in the area would have their fingers on the pulse of some of the most motivated sellers.
And what did you discover? Sam asked. Well, I only reached 4 of them.
I left messages with the other six, but what I found was very exciting. I told each of them exactly what I was looking for: properties I could flip for quick cash in 90 days or less. Turns out that my hunch was right. None of the properties that I earmarked from the listing service would fit into our narrow parameters. But one of the realtors thinks he has a client who is willing to substantially discount his price if we can cash him out quickly. Jeremy, who had been concentrating on his food, looked up at the mention of the word cash. "Sam, I'm glad we have this division of labor, because I'm not tracking a lot of this. But there's one word I've always understood pretty well, and that's cash. Can you share with me where all of this cash that we're supposed to come up with is coming from? If anybody were to look at my finances, they'd run the other way." "That's a common assumption of beginning investors," Sam pointed out. "They think they will be using their own cash, their own credit. If anybody looks at my credit, the deal is DOA," Jeremy reiterated. "Mine too," Michelle mirrored him, "as if everyone doesn't know already." "It's just that attitude," continued Sam, "that keeps people from buying real estate. As I was trying to teach you before I was interrupted," quick glances at the offending parties, "imagine what it would be like to have a credit line of $10 million in cash." Now she looked directly at Jeremy. "That you could use to buy as much wholesale real estate as you can find. How confident would you be in your negotiations?"
"It'd make me feel, oh, maybe a little more confident." Jeremy's sarcasm indicated that it would, in fact, make him feel extremely confident.
"That's the point. Right now, when you try to negotiate, your posture is weak. You feel dishonest. You know you don't have the wherewithal to afford the property. No credit, no cash, no steady income stream. You know that when it gets time to qualify for a bank loan, you'll be discovered. And all of these thoughts are being broadcast subliminally through your body language, your posture, your words, your eyes. You're a walking billboard screaming, 'I'm a deadbeat.' Jeremy, before you make an offer, you've got to be confident. Confidence is like having the cash in the bank. So where do you find this cash? It's all around you right now. Billions of dollars sitting in other people's bank accounts, just itching to be put to work at higher than the measly 3% or 4% they're earning. That's how I do my deals, Jeremy. I don't use my money. I don't use my credit. I use other people's money. That's leverage." "Great," Jeremy's sarcasm remained. "Where do we find all these people who are going to be falling all over people like us, wanting to give us all this cash?"
"I'm not going to tell you right now, but once one of you finds me a deal worth shouting about, believe me, the cash is just a phone call away."
"I'm sure interested in that phone number," Jeremy commented. Michelle wondered, did Jeremy think that Sam was making this up to keep them working? A non-existent carrot to be followed by an all-too-real stick? Do I think that myself? "Here's the formula," Sam continued. "Find it, fund it, flip it. First, you find the great deal. Then you find the money to fund it. And finally, you flip it for a profit." Renee re-entered the conversation.
"Well, I think I'm close to finding the first part of the equation. My realtor, Brendan, is a whiz, and he knows exactly what I'm looking for. He's beating the bushes for me right now."
It was harder not to believe in an infinite network, Michelle reflected, hearing how these pieces were fitting together.
"In my mind," Sam said, "we've got about 30 to 45 days to beat the bushes, as you say, to flush out several potential real estate deals. That will leave us about 6 weeks to flip them. It'll be close, but we should find at least one or two, maximum three, deals to flip. At $50,000 to $100,000 each, it'll add to the old stew pot."
Do you really believe that we can make as much as $250,000 in 90 days? Summer asked, breathlessly.
Ordinarily, no, Sam answered. Most people don't pursue their dreams as if their life depended on it, or, she shot a glance at Michelle, as if the lives of their children depended on it. Most people have a, let's try this, let's dabble in that attitude. They're ready to pull the plug at any hint of trouble, not to mention to blame bad luck or other people if they don't make it. I got into this to help Michelle, but the truth is that I've lived my whole life as if my life depended on it, because my life does depend on it. She grinned, if you follow. Michelle pushed her plate away. She'd eaten her fill. Apparently, Sam had too. She stood and flipped another page on another chart. Then she wrote in big red letters, a deadline, a consequence, no other options. Michelle has a deadline, a consequence, and no other options. These are the kinds of situations where you can no longer count on yourself. You have to bring in other forces to help you. Why are we so willing to help her right now? Because she doesn't have any choice. This brings out the best in people. Not everyone will rally around you, but the right people will. They'll join the team because you're playing a big game. Sam, Jeremy interrupted, you said you had some news for us about something.
Yes, I do.
The rest of you put your forks down, because I need your full attention. Sam gave them the background. She had called her friend at the Planning Commission, who was not an elected official, but a county employee. The plans for all the major projects that were being developed came through his office before they went on to the county commissioners for final approval. There was a vote scheduled on a major new shopping mall. Some of this has already been reported in the papers, but my friend tells me that even though there has been a lot of political pressure on the commission to turn it down, he has heard the scuttlebutt that it will probably pass. If it does, there's going to be a massive amount of activity surrounding that part of town. Lots of construction. It's going to affect property values in a major way. All residential properties on the streets adjoining the mall will now be ripe for conversion to office space. Up to now, there was no reason for commercial zoning, but now, with commercial zoning across the street, there will be a lot of conversion possibilities. Let me give you a quick example. Suppose a 1,000-square-foot apartment is renting for $1,000 a month. As a small office space, the same area will rent for between $2,000 and $3,000 a month. That effectively doubles or even triples the value of the property. Although there has already been some speculation in property values there, I just feel that there will be some sleeper deals available if we focus on that target territory. So, Michelle, while you're waiting for the next call from Tilly, I want you to go down to the courthouse and get copies of the plat maps in the 10-square-block area around the proposed area for the mall. Bring them back here, tape them together, and put them up on the wall. Sam pointed to a place where some Monet reproductions hung. I'll have my staff pull this artwork down, and you can tape up the maps. Then, I want you to systematically contact every owner of any property. Go knocking on doors if you have to. Most owners will be aware of the rezoning issue and will ask for top dollar for their properties. I want us to find the 4 or 5 properties out of 1,000 in this area that are owned by people who have a need to sell at a lower price. Michelle nodded her agreement, although she wondered exactly how she would do it. Now, listen up, Eagles, Sam continued. Things are going to start to get chaotic as we put out more and more feelers through our networks looking for highly motivated sellers. Renee has already got a few lines going with realtors. We need to run our own ads in the paper. We're going to start phone campaigns, direct mail campaigns, visiting the courthouse. We've barely just begun. It's like a big funnel. At the top are all of the possible deals that are going to flow our way. Of them, 95% will not pan out. Only 1 in 20 will be worth looking at.
The goal is to evaluate 1,000 properties in the next 30 days. There are going to be hundreds of leads to follow up. This is grunt work. Lots of little failures. A few promising successes that peter out. Then one or two deals that will make it all worthwhile. The phone is going to start to ring. People will be popping in. It's going to be like Grand Central Station around here. Renee sat up straight, as if she'd just had a small electric shock. I set my cell phone to vibrate, she explained as everyone looked her way. She already had the phone out, and when she looked at the display, she said, I think this is my realtor calling. I'll just step out and take it in the hallway. As Renee was leaving, Sam gave the group their marching orders. Jeremy and Summer were to continue their search for their million-dollar needle in the internet haystack. Michelle was to be dispatched off to the courthouse. Sam herself was going to write and place an ad in the classified section of the local paper. As the group was breaking up, Renee came back into the room. We've got a hot lead on a foreclosure, she said excitedly. Michelle, do you want to come with me? I'll drive you by the courthouse after we check out this one property. 79 days. Michelle and Sam were headed for the Rock. It had been several days since they had been down there together. But now, on this crisp early morning in the middle of autumn, they could see the trees across the hillside turning their beautiful oranges and reds. It was a breathtaking scene. After going through their usual ritual of calling out their goals and manifestations, Sam and Michelle sat down side by side. Michelle couldn't wait to share with Sam some of her major concerns. It seemed that they were going into so many brand new areas that Michelle had never imagined before, and it was overwhelming. It was as if the pathways to her brain were jammed with information that she did not have time to assimilate. Toys, real estate, and the internet all mixing together. She felt as if she was the central focal point of it, the fulcrum of the entire process. As a fulcrum, she needed to be strong, and she did not feel strong at all. She felt as if she was putting all these people at risk, wasting their time and squandering their hopes. She knew Sam would understand and yet would have some kind of answer for her. Sam sat next to her and dangled her feet over the rock and began to talk as she looked out over the beautiful mountain peaks dusted with clouds. Your husband had a very interesting name, Gideon. Do you know what it means? No, not really. It means one who cuts down the enemy. Michelle wrinkled her brow. Where did you learn that? I was browsing in the Bible a few nights ago and stumbled across the story about an Old Testament hero named Gideon. Gideon lived at a time when the nation of Israel was under the control of the Midianites, a nation to the south, about where Saudi Arabia is today. For 7 years, the Israelites lived in such oppression and abject poverty that they cried out to the Lord in prayer. One day a young man, Gideon, was threshing a meager supply of wheat when an angel appeared to him. I'll bet that was a shock, Michelle remarked. Sam chuckled. The angel spoke to this poor farmer and said, The Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Gideon looked around and said, Who, me? Yes, you, said the angel. Go and save your country. Gideon said, How can I save my country? Mine is the weakest family in our tribe, and I am the least son in my father's house. The angel said, Go in the strength you have and destroy the Midianites. I will be with you. What did he do? Asked Michelle, suddenly interested. That's the best part of the story. After Gideon gathered an army of 32,000 men, the angel said, Your army is too big. When you beat the Midianites, I don't want you boasting that you did it yourself. Tell those who are afraid that they can go home. And 22,000 men went home. That left an army of 10,000. Michelle looked shocked. Sam held up an index finger. But, said the angel, there are still too many. take them down to the river, and separate those who scoop the water up to their mouths with their hands from those who get down on their knees to drink. That was to show who was the most battle-ready. This left just 300 men out of 10,000. With these 300 men, the angel promised to deliver the enemy into Gideon's hands. Sam paused. This is how he did it. In the middle of the night, Gideon and his men surrounded the armies of Midianites in the valley below. The enemy soldiers were thick as locusts, and their camels could no more be counted than the sand on the seashore. Each of Gideon's men was armed with only a trumpet and a clay vessel with a torch inside. On Gideon's signal, each man smashed the vessel and blew his trumpet and shouted, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon!" The sleeping men in the enemy camp below were awakened by the trumpets and stumbled out of their tents to see the valley ringed with torches. Confused, they began fighting one another. Talk about friendly fire! Those who weren't killed fled and were later routed. 120,000 Midianites died that day.
"Wow," said Michelle.
"I think I know why you're feeling overwhelmed, Butterfly. Like Gideon, you've wondered, how can one weak woman defeat an army of Ericsons?" This caused Michelle to smile. "But remember who Gideon had as his partner. You and God can do anything. But without that spiritual foundation, even if you're as strong as the Midianites, your troops end up fighting amongst themselves. Your army is scattered, and the battle is lost." Michelle pondered out loud. "I call it spiritual math. You're either with God, multiplied by infinity, or without God, multiplied by zero. One times infinity equals infinity, but a million times zero still equals zero. That's why I tithe. I want God on my side." Michelle sat there in deep contemplation. More than anything, she was moved by the new meaning she had discovered for her late husband's name. A few minutes later, Sam pulled her up by the hands. "Come on," Sam said. "I've planned a fun exercise for the team to do this morning. We don't want to be late." 78 days. Michelle sat down at the conference table. In front of her, she found a small white box wrapped in purple and yellow ribbons. There was an identical box in front of each team member. "Go ahead," said Sam, smiling. "Open them." Inside, each team member found 500 crisp white business cards with their own names embossed in raised gold lettering. Under the name was the title, Millionaire Eagle. "Very impressive, Sam," Jeremy said. "Thank you." "Look on the back," she encouraged. Each person flipped over the card to find the amount, $1,000, printed in black. "What does this mean?" Summer asked. "I'm glad you asked," countered their mentor. "When you hand this business card to someone, they will probably ask you the same question. What does this mean?" Each of them nodded expectantly. "Here is what you say. This card is worth $1,000, so don't lose it. I'm a real estate investor. If you ever hear of someone who is desperate to sell their property, give me a call. If I buy the property, I'll give you $1,000 in cash for the lead."
"Whoa, that's a lot of money," said Courtney.
"But," Sam responded, "it's nothing compared to the profit you'll make. Because you won't even consider buying a property unless you can earn at least $25,000. Shouldn't you share a little of the windfall with the person who told you about it?" Courtney had to agree. "Now here is your assignment," continued Sam. "We need to get more feelers into the area. The faster we can spread the message, the better. So wherever you go, to the grocery store, to the restaurant, to the cleaners, to the gas station, in a bank line, make contact with at least one person. Get his or her business card and give them your own card with instructions. Break out of your normal routine. Go to different places each day so you can meet new people.
Give out 5 to 10 cards a day. We can never tell where one of these cards might end up.
Sam, isn't this a bit extreme? What are people going to think? Renee countered.
Well, look at it this way. Suppose I gave you $100 bill for every one of those cards you properly placed by the end of the day.
You mean I hand out 10 cards and you give me $1,000 in cash?
Yes, said Sam. Now do you care what people think?
If you put it that way, no, and I won't stop at 10, she smiled.
Jeremy offered under his breath, I'll talk to every person I see.
Here's one of my favorite sayings, Sam said. You'd be a lot less worried about what people think of you if you realized how little they do.
Sam followed this with one of her hearty laughs.
Are you saying that each card we hand out makes us $100?
Michelle wondered out loud.
Let's suppose that 500 well-placed cards eventually lead us to one excellent property that nets us a $50,000 profit. That breaks down to $100 for every card we gave out. So in essence, every time you hand out a card, it's like getting back a $100 bill in future money, isn't it? Eventually, these contacts begin to pay off. Cast your bread on the waters, and eventually you get a sandwich back.
Several of the group responded at the same time.
The same holds true for calling ads in the newspapers, continued Sam.
I've got to admit, replied Summer, I don't know why, but I hate to call on ads in the paper. I feel like I won't know how to respond if they ask me a question.
Okay, Summer, there's a newspaper. Sam pointed to a newspaper on the conference table, and there's a telephone.
Suppose I give you $100 bill for every ad you called from the real estate classifieds, but only for the next hour. How many calls would you make?
As many as I could.
Would you care if someone made you feel like a fool because you couldn't answer their questions?
Not if you gave me $100 a call.
Besides, how are they going to know it's you? Jeremy chuckled.
Thank you, Jeremy. Sam smiled at him. Every contact we make this month, every ad we call on, every offer we write is future money in the bank. So let's go out and make some future money today. It's Saturday, so I'm suggesting that rather than spend another minute in this stuffy conference room, we split into teams and hit the streets for 3 hours.
Are you serious? Jeremy said. Sam produced two $100 bills and slapped them in the center of the table. The team that hands out the most cards in the next 3 hours wins. But you can't just leave a stack in a dry cleaner's, folks. You have to hand the card to someone, and you get an extra point if the person you talk to will give you one of their business cards in return. Sam looked at her watch. This contest officially ends at 12:30 at the diner downtown. My treat for lunch. For a moment, no one moved. The eaglets all looked at one another as if their mentor had gone off the deep end. Then Michelle looked at Courtney and raised her eyebrows.
I'm game, said Courtney, who got up, grabbed her purse, and headed for the door.
Within 15 seconds, the conference room was empty. Sam and Renee were already seated in a corner booth as the two other teams came in the front entrance together, laughing. It was 12:45 p.m.
That was incredible, Sam, Summer said as she plopped herself down in the corner booth next to Michelle. I met more people in this past 3 hours than I did in the past 3 months. A few people looked at me funny, but for the most part, people were really nice.
I agree, Michelle seconded.
Although the manager of one restaurant did ask us to leave.
But even he took one of our cards, said Michelle's partner, Courtney. And here is his business card to prove it. She slapped the card down on the table with a flourish.
Okay, eaglets, Sam said. Let's have a tally.
The team of Sam and Renee had given away 35 cards and had received 23 business cards in return for a total of 58 points. Michelle and Courtney had gathered 18 business cards while handing out 30 cards
for a total of 48 points. Jeremy and Summer had purposefully waited until last to report their results. When Summer reached into her purse and pulled out a huge pile of business cards, everyone gasped. Jeremy announced their tally. 563 points. If we'd had another 2 hours, we could have gone through our entire box of cards. It was Jeremy's idea, Summer began. We started out by asking ourselves where we could find the greatest concentrations of people. Jeremy said he used to work at the Mariposa Plaza, so we went there first and arrived just as three conferences took their mid-morning break. So there were hundreds of people milling around in the halls and foyer. We bumped into a seminar leader who was holding a real estate seminar. We told him that we were real estate investors with millions of dollars to invest. Summer looked at her mentor expectantly. "That's what you told us, wasn't it, Sam?" Sam nodded her agreement. Jeremy jumped in to complete the story. "I took you at your word, Sam, that you'd show us how to find as much money as we wanted with one telephone call." The seminar leader was happy to introduce us to his audience. We told the group that we would come up with the cash and partner with them if the deal was right, or that we would simply give them a $1,000 finder's fee if we bought a property from a lead they gave us. It was like finding an entire room full of bird dogs. Everybody was happy. Summer jumped in excitedly. "I was kind of nervous. I'd never spoken to a group that big before. There had to be 250 people in the room. But we were able to hand out 250 cards, one to every person, and got back 175 cards from them. And that was just one group. At this point, we split up to cover more territory. Jeremy concentrated on the other hotels. I hit the malls and restaurants. After a while, it didn't bother me at all to walk up to a total stranger." "What did you say?" asked Michelle, who was completely amazed to hear her shy friend describe how she had broken out of her cocoon. "I struggled with what to say at first, but then I just decided to tell them the truth, that we were trying to make $1 million in 90 days. I told them about being mentored by a millionaire." She looked over at Sam. "I didn't tell them your name, Sam." Sam nodded to Summer as if to thank her. "But as soon as I started saying that, I had a hard time ending the conversation with most people. They wanted to know more, but I was running out of time. So I told them that if they gave me their business card, I would get back to them after the 90 days and tell them what happened." Summer took a pause for effect. "Get this. I even had one guy offer to pay me $1,000 if I would spend 2 days with him, one-on-one, showing him how we did it." "Well, Summer," Courtney interjected, "that might have had something to do with the fact that you're a not-so-unattractive blonde." Everyone laughed. "I disagree," Summer countered, mildly offended. "He was with his wife, and they both wanted me to teach them. Can you believe that? Somebody was willing to pay me $1,000. "Sorry, Summer, I didn't mean..." "That's it!" Jeremy exploded, cutting short Courtney's apology. Now he had everyone's attention. He was staring into the distance, speaking half to himself, half to his partners. "For over a week, I've been surfing the internet for our million-dollar idea, and it was right there, in front of my face, the whole time. What are you talking about, Jeremy?" "Oh my gosh!" Jeremy spoke as the aha broke brighter over his face. "Jeremy?" Summer tried to bring him back. "Sorry, guys, I've got to test something out." With that, he bolted from the booth, leaving his partner staring at him as he ran out the door. 77 days. Michelle rushed eagerly into the Golden House lounge, where she found Tilly, alone, sitting in her wheelchair, clutching the remote, and staring fixedly at the big screen television. "There you are," Michelle cried when she saw her. "Oh, dear, this isn't the best time," Tilly frowned. "My drama is on." Michelle crouched beside Tilly's wheelchair. "I've been worried about you. I've been leaving messages all morning, and Summer said you weren't in your room. I finally decided to just come track you down." Tilly looked down at the control panel of her wheelchair.
I'm not sure where you thought I had gone to, dear.
Michelle refrained from pointing out that Tilly was at an age where sudden departures were not uncommon.
Well, but Summer... Michelle, I'm sorry, but this is the one program I'm hooked on. You're just going to have to wait for the commercial.
Michelle sighed and sat down on the couch behind Tilly. She watched as patiently as she could, while two heavily made-up blonde women argued about a man who had amnesia. Finally, the commercial came on. Tilly maneuvered her wheelchair sideways to talk to Michelle. Actually, I was at my son's house all day yesterday. He has the most adorable, but never mind, we'd better get down to business. I received the prototype yesterday morning, and it's just not acceptable. Oh, Tilly. Yes, I was quite disappointed myself. Couldn't we just use it anyway? Tilly clicked her tongue. No, you have one opportunity with these higher-ups. It's got to be perfect. So what do we do now? Well, that's why I went to my son's house. But first I took the van down to the fabric store. His wife's got a nice sewing room set up, and well, I used to do all the prototypes myself back in the old days.
You're creating the prototype yourself?
Well, not exactly. Another Golden House resident and I are putting a couple of them together right now. Eleanor is still a fine seamstress, though her hearing is not what it used to be. We should be finished by tonight. Just because you caught me in front of the television doesn't mean I haven't been working hard. I never meant to say, by the way, I was eating dinner with another resident last night, Jack Morris. He was an attorney for many years, on the boards of several corporations, you know. I've been telling everyone about our talking bear, and that includes him. Jack thinks it would be a great fundraising item for charities. One of his other buddies down the hall has also had a lot of experience in the charitable area. He calls it philanthropism, a cross between capitalism and philanthropy. Get it? You provide the product at the lowest wholesale price, and then you and the charity split the profits. Everybody wins. Tilly smiled. Think your friend Sam would approve? Michelle sat back. I know she would. I'm impressed. Thanks, Tilly. And then another one of my friends who lives down the hall, her son is an expert in import-export. He's got contacts in Hong Kong who will give us a real good deal on the electronics if we need it. So what do you want me to do? Don't you worry. You just keep up your prayers and leave little Tilly to work her magic. I haven't had this much fun in 10 years, except for that darn sewing machine. These newfangled ones, they're all computerized these days. Took me an hour just to read the doggone instructions. Any word from your folks inside of Hasbro yet? Tilly shook her head. With all the ways people have of getting in touch now, it's even harder than it used to be. Don't you find that amusing? We've been trading messages, but I'm confident that they'll come through for us. Tilly, you are the very best. Michelle grasped Tilly's hand, but the commercial had ended, and with that, so did their conversation. 76 days. Jeremy had asked all the team members to meet in the conference room for an announcement of earth-shattering intensity at 7 a.m. Everyone was able to attend, even Renee, although she would have to leave by 7:45 to get to school on time. Michelle smiled to herself when she walked in the conference room. Jeremy and Summer had started with two computer terminals on a sideboard at the far end, but their territory of flip charts and books was extending not so gradually toward the center of the room. Jeremy had arranged the conference table chairs in a semicircle around his end of the room. Everyone here? Okay. Quiet on the set. Jeremy paced like a tiger in a cage. Michelle noticed that his once awkward gait had become more assured and graceful. He was sporting a new haircut and actually wearing a sport coat. When he walks in here with a tie, I'm going to need to take a nitroglycerin pill, she thought. Michelle obediently took her seat, as did the others, except Sam, who hoisted herself on the edge of the table.
This book is continued on Disc 9.